somehow shape the future. I would hope and pray I'd touch lives by the way I live today. Just one life. I wanna leave a legacy that years from now they'll see that I live only for the cause of Christ. Oh, to make a difference by living day to day as a reflection of God.
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of Legacy Podcast, helping you build your legacy. This episode is number 242, and in it you will be able to hear an exposition of Ephesians chapter 5, verses 8 through 14. That is a message that I brought recently to the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church. And in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8 through 14, you will hear the idea of walking in light. This is the context of Paul's address to the Ephesians on explaining what it is to walk as a Christian after you have been engrafted into the Lord and you are one with Him. How then are we to walk as Christians? And this says that in addition to walking in love that we looked at last time, this is walking in the light. And so stay tuned for that. I want to direct your attention to the show notes. Again, this is episode 242. There you'll be able to find information in addition to what is explained here. You'll find an outline for the text as well as some resources that are available. So check that out, 242. And here you go with an exposition of Ephesians 5, 8 through 14. I did not grow up in church all that much. I went periodically, particularly on Cookie Sunday, I would go because once a month they would have cookies and Kool-Aid and coffee in the fellowship hall, and I would typically like to go on that day because I'd get a bunch of cookies. And as you might imagine, as a little boy, that was appealing to me. And but ordinarily I would not go. But when I was a young boy, there was one song that I remember singing that I liked to sing in church, and that was "This Little Light of Mine." Remember that one? "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Won't let Satan blow it out. I'm going to let it shine. You know, hide it under a bushel, no. And you had all kinds of motions. Hide it under a bushel, no. I'm going to let it shine, right? You had different hand motions to it, and it was a great song. And the reality of it is that there is a great deal of truth in that song, because it reflects a lot of passages in the Bible that speak about how Christians are to be a light to the world. One of those passages is what we're going to look at today here in the book of Ephesians. How is it that Christians are to live in a pagan world? The book of Ephesians was written to Christians living in a pagan world, much like our world, where the people around them were living in immorality. They had a lot of wealth in Ephesus, but the immorality that was around them was rampant. And how is it that Christians are to live in that way? If you recall, the first three chapters of the book of Ephesians deal with getting theology correct, understanding who God is, what He has done in the believer's life, the transformation that takes place. And then from chapter 4 to the end of the chapter, it's very application-oriented. Now that we have that theology down, now that we know who we are in Christ, how are we to live? And so we have been looking at that since chapter 3. And in fact, beginning in chapter 4, started this idea of how we are to walk as Christians. And the idea is that we are to live our life. The metaphor for walking is we are to live our lives in such a way as Christians, and it is applied that way. We are to walk in unity in chapter 4, verse 1 through 24. We are to walk in the Spirit in chapter 5, verses 25 through 32. We are to walk in love, chapter 5, verse 1 through 7. That's what we looked at last week. We're continuing with that same idea of walking, and today we're going to look at walking in the light. because that's what is recorded here in verses 8 through 14. And what we're told here, more specifically, is that we are commanded in verse 8 to walk as children of light. Well, what does that mean? Why are we to do that? And how are we to do that? We're going to be looking at three reasons why we are to walk as children of light and two ways in which this is to be done. So first of all, we are to walk as children of light because we have been changed. Because we have been changed. Look with me in verse 8. It says, "For you were once darkness, but now you are the light of the Lord." The contrast between light and darkness is a regular theme in the Scriptures. Light carries this idea of goodness and righteousness and holiness and purity and the things pertaining to God. A darkness then refers to blindness and evil and those things that are pertaining to the wicked one. And so when light is contrasted with darkness, of course, light refers to those who are followers of Christ, and darkness refers to those who are not. Darkness describes the character of the life of the unconverted. It is the realm of darkness that is ruled by the prince of darkness, the power of darkness. Those who are in darkness, the Bible says, are headed for an eternal darkness, separation from God and all that is good. Sinners love darkness more than the light, the Scriptures say. And so in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 19, it says, "The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble." And so that is the former state of all of us. We live in darkness. We live contrary to the will of God. This is repeated over and over again in the Scriptures, our past life. The Scriptures refer to it over and over again in many different ways. In fact, our hymns sing of it. "Once I was lost, but now I am found. I was blind, but now I see." It's the same kind of contrast that's taking place here. We have been changed. And so what does it say? Some very important words after that. "For you were once in darkness, but now." You know, that small little word, B-U-T, is an important word in the Scripture. It carries this idea of contrast, and so it is, a deep contrast. The contrast between darkness and light is, in fact, the opposite. And so, "But now you are light in the Lord." This carries the idea of reflecting light. The light is not in us ourselves, but Christ who is reflected in us. Christians have been changed, and so now we know the difference between light and darkness. Is this not what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount when he says, "You are the light of the world"? A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, that it may give light to all who are in the house. Then he says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." How is the Father glorified through our good works? Because we are reflecting the good works of Christ. We don't have the good works in ourselves. It is Christ working in and through us that then radiates this glory and this light. And so we are reflecting the light. That is why he is the one who gets the praise for it. Jesus himself is the light. John chapter 1, verses 4 and 5, it says, "In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world." Just as a moon reflects the light of the sun, so we as Christians are to reflect the light of the Lord in our life. The glory of the moon is not in itself. The glory of the moon is only in so much that it reflects the glory of the sun. You have seen the things that children sometimes bring home that are glow-in-the-dark, where you have to set them up to the light first. And it's like they absorb that light, and then you take it into a closet or something, you close the doors, and it glows. Now, is it that particular thing that has any power within itself to shine the light? No. It's only as it's exposed to the light itself that it then absorbs that and then reflects it. I'm reminded of Moses when he went up on Mount Sinai. We read that recently in our family devotions. And how when he went up on Mount Sinai and met with the Lord, it says that his face shone. And he came down and he had to put a veil over his face. Now some understand whether or not that veil was to prevent people from seeing the glory or whether it was to prevent people from seeing the glory fading. We're not sure exactly what it was. But nonetheless, when he was before the Lord, it says that his face shone and he came down from the mountain. Why? What, was there any kind of special glow about him? No, it was that he was reflecting the glory of God. And so it is. If we are children of light, we are to reflect the glory and the holiness and the righteousness of Christ himself. As he shines in us, we then are to shine in the world. Matthew chapter 6, verse 22 and 23 says this, "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness." Now the idea behind this verse is that the eye gate, the gate by which things enter into us through the eye, is important, because if that eye does not work properly, the light cannot come in and it's dark. And of course that is scientifically accurate. It is through the light that our eyes actually are able to achieve the eyesight that it has. And so the idea is that if that eye gate is faulty in some way, that it's not able to receive the light in, it's not able then to be able to project that light and be able to see. And so same it is with us. When our hearts are wicked, we're not able to receive the light. But when Christ changes our heart, then he's able to reflect that light in and through us. If we still walk in darkness, it's very good evidence that we have not been changed by the Lord. And we need to repent and trust in him. And then it says here, walk as children of light. Of course, this is the command. This is the imperative. This is the thing that we are to do. Because we have been changed, we are to walk as children of light. John chapter 12, verse 36 says, "While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become sons of the light." These things Jesus spoke. And 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 5 says, "You are all sons of light as sons of the day. You are not of the night, nor of darkness." So let us walk in the light according to the change that has occurred in our conversion. Secondly, we are to walk as children of light because it is consistent with the Spirit. It is consistent with the Spirit. Look with me in verse 9. It says, "For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth." Now, this is a parenthetical statement. I think some of your translations may even have this in parentheses, as mine does. And the idea is that this is to carry on with what has just been said, and yet it also is profound in its understanding because it shows the consistency between walking in the light and walking in the Spirit. We have already observed that we are to walk in the Spirit. We're supposed to walk in love. We're supposed to walk in unity, as we've already looked at. And here we have this reinforced with the idea that we are to walk in the light, and by walking in the light, we are also walking in the Spirit. The word "for" here carries the idea of being a cause or a reason. It is in contrast to the fruit of darkness in chapter 5, verse 11, that we'll get to in just a moment. And so we are to walk in the light as being filled with the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit, now some versions may say here the fruit of the light. It depends upon which manuscript in the Greek that they are taking their text from. But either way, it basically carries the same idea, and that is that they are consistent one with the other. And then he describes three fruit of this Spirit: goodness, righteousness, and truth. Goodness is the opposite of malice, which was discussed in chapter 4, verse 31. Righteousness is the opposite of covetousness, which is carried out in chapter 5, verse 3. Truth is the opposite of lying in verse 25 of chapter 4. And so this section started by talking about walking in the Spirit. And so it is reasonable that by walking in the light, we are consistently walking also in the Spirit. It is as though Paul is arguing the point from different metaphors. Spirit, love, light, they all carry the same thing. That is, we are to live changed lives before the Lord. Now, we're told in many places in the Scripture that there is fruit that is produced by walking in the Spirit. In fact, in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22, we're told a list of things: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control all come as a result of living in the Spirit. And here we're told that righteousness, goodness, and truth come from living in the Spirit. I don't believe any of these are exhaustive lists. I think that all the attributes of the Godhead, in the sense that how they relate to man, can be expressed through walking in the Spirit. But the idea is that there is a consistency of character when it comes to the Christian following after Christ and the conduct of Christ himself. The fruit of walking in the light are the same fruit as walking in the Spirit. The Spirit often manifests itself as light. And so we are to walk this way because it is consistent with the Spirit. But thirdly, it proves what is acceptable to the Lord. It proves what is acceptable to the Lord. We see this in verse 10. My translation reads, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. The word finding out, or the two words finding out, is actually one word in the Greek. It means proving. Just as someone would prove something to be true or false. I don't remember how many of you all remember in mathematics class when you had to prove different theorems. I used to always, you know, you had to do the little therefore sign, you know, if this, and then the therefore sign. I don't remember much of it anymore. I'll probably have to remind myself when my kids get to that in their math class. Of course, I don't do much of the math teaching, so maybe I won't have to. Maybe I can escape some of that. But the idea is that it's proving something. We have more specific or more applicable way of looking at that in our day, because if you go to a grocery store and you give them a $100 bill to pay for the groceries, what do they do with that bill? They take out a little marker and they mark through that bill, right? Because supposedly if they mark through that bill and the mark turns kind of a yellowish, it means that it's a genuine bill. But if the mark stays dark, black, or whatever it is, then it indicates that it's a false bill. What are they doing? They are proving, they are testing to see whether or not it's genuine. And so when we walk in light, we are approving, we are showing, we are demonstrating that it is true. We cannot walk in ignorance and expect to walk in the light. We must find out what is acceptable to the Lord. Before we do anything, we should always ask ourselves, is this approved by the Lord? Is this what is right? Is this what is good to do? Thank God that we have the Bible to tell us what is right and wrong. I'm glad that I don't have to rely upon my conscience, although the conscience can be a good guide sometimes. I'm glad we don't have to rely upon society to tell us what is good and what is right. But we can look to the Scriptures to determine for us what is acceptable before the Lord. You know, we take a great deal of effort trying to find out what is acceptable standard in the workplace, or what is an acceptable standard by our spouse. My wife is a great housekeeper, and she likes things meticulously clean. And she's nodding her head no, but to me they are. And I don't know what it is about me, but I make a mess doing everything. I will be cleaning the dishes, and I'll make more of a mess cleaning the dishes. I mean, it's, you know, and we, the way we've got our sink designed, there's like water always splashes up on the back, and it just drives my wife crazy, because every time I do the dishes, I get water splashed up back there, and then it kind of drips down the back. You know, she doesn't, yeah, some of you ladies are, you know, you're like saying, yes, I agree, exactly, right? and so, I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, yeah, to be acceptable to the spouse. We take a great deal of effort, at least we should take a great deal of effort to try to find out what is acceptable to the standard of our spouse. If that is true in the workplace, or if that is true in the home, how much more should we take great efforts to determine what is acceptable before the Lord? Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 says this, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so we have some consistency. The point is that as believers, we are to walk in the truth, the knowledge of the Lord. As we walk in the truth, the knowledge of the Lord will become more and more clear. It is like trying to find your way in the darkness versus trying to find your way in the light. I don't know how many of you all have ever stayed in a hotel or stayed at a new place and the lights were off and you had to get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you know, and it's all dark and you're like trying to, you know, go along the walls trying to find the place and you can't move. But when the light's on, you just get up and go, right? Because you can see everything. And that's the way it is. When we're walking in darkness, we're just kind of groping along, trying to find our way. And, you know, we never go the right way. But when the light is on, we are able to see and we're able to understand what is right and the direction that we are to go. And so let's change directions now and look at how we are to walk as children of light. So we've seen the reasons why we are to walk as children of light. Now let's answer the question, how are we to walk as children of light? And he gives us two ways. First of all, in verse 11, he says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness." Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. This is a metaphorical way of saying have little to do with something. He has just said in verse 7, if you recall from last time, not to partake in those things that the unconverted do in their unconversion. And so here he says something similar, that we are not to partake in the unfruitful works of darkness. It is interesting to note that the darkness has fruit, even though it is unfruitful. And the idea is that it is fruit that we don't want. I have been for years, well, at least since I moved into our property, been trying to grow fruit trees. And something that will produce some kind of fruit that will be edible. And for a while I was really challenged because Graham wanted all the pasture for his sheep. And I would forget to tell him that I had planted a tree out there. And he would graze his sheep right over my tree and it would be gone. So that was a challenge for a while. Now some of the trees that I have are getting up big enough that they won't be grazed down. But I was so cheap, I bought just generic brands. And so, they're getting diseased and they're getting pested and they're not producing a great deal of fruit. But I can produce pokeberry bushes like crazy. You know what pokeberry bushes are, right? Down on my dam, I've got a little dam with some little water in it. And all over the dam, I've got pokeberry bushes. Now, pokeberry bushes, of course, produce a little tiny purple berry that's poisonous. And so it produces a fruit. So I've got fruit on my property. But it's not the fruit I want. And that's the way it is with those who walk in darkness. They produce a fruit, but it's not the kind of fruit that we want. And then it says, have no fellowship. Do not be partakers with. Do not share with them. John Calvin says it this way, in short, we must abstain from giving any consent or advice or approbation, that means approval, or assistance with darkness. For in all these things, we have fellowship. And so we should not consent to what they do. We cannot give consent to those who live in darkness, who walk in darkness. There is a tendency in our culture to do this. Well, whatever they decide to do, it's okay with me. To each his own, right? That's giving consent to dark practices. We cannot do that. Secondly, it says advice. We should not walk in the advice or give advice to darkness. We cannot advise them in the darkness how to participate in the darkness. This would be hypocritical, disapproving of what they do, but helping them to do it. This is a form of what in legal terms is called aiding and abetting the enemy. And that's really what you're doing when you are assisting those who walk in darkness to walk in darkness. Now we could go into a great deal of discussion on what takes place on the public spectrum when it comes to aiding and assisting darkness. And certainly there is a great deal of that does take place. Also, approval or approbation. This again is similar to consenting to these practices, but it's different in the sense that it carries a little bit more of an active role. Consenting is more of a passive role, whereas approval is actually more of an active role. And so those are ways in which we fellowship or partake with darkness that we should not. Paul says it this way in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. He says, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness?" The image that is given here, of course, is yoke oxen, where they would pull together. And if they were unevenly yoked or unequally yoked, one would pull one way and it would be hard. They wouldn't be able to work together as a team. And the scriptures give us this picture to show that we cannot be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. It doesn't work. We can't work together in that way. The reason for this command, of course, is that the mixture of darkness with light will always dilute the light. We are informed by chemists that one grain of iodine will give color to 7,000 times its weight in water. That's powerful. One indulgence in bad company is enough to communicate much of its contagion to your moral being. If you handle pitch with your bare hands, it will adhere for days or weeks. So the connection which you make with bad company. It will pollute you in ways your whole life and will suffer for it. You know, we think of just the smallest microbe in water can contaminate that water. Can't even see the microbe, it's so small, and yet it will contaminate that. And if that's the case in the natural realm, how much more on a spiritual realm will partaking in darkness or participating, having fellowship with those who walk in darkness, contaminate the light of Christ that is within you? And so we are to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. But secondly, we are to expose the darkness. We are to expose the darkness. We see this in verses 11 through 13. Again, it says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but, or is that important word again, but rather expose them. The idea of exposing here carries the idea of bringing them to light, uncovering what is being done. This is what light does. It exposes the darkness. In fact, darkness cannot continue in the midst of light. It can be displaced. It can move, but it cannot continue within it. There is this idea that Christians are not to speak out about sin because we are, you know, supposed to just keep that to the church or something. And yet, how are we to reprove it? How are we to expose it if we don't speak out about it? It is one thing to just abstain yourself, but it is another thing to add to your abstaining a reproof of those who participate in darkness. And so in verse 12 it says, for it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. Now how can you expose the darkness, speak about the darkness, and expose those who are participating in the darkness, and yet do so in such a way that you're not speaking things that we shouldn't even speak about? You know, some of the things that take place among men in secret, in dark places, they're things that we shouldn't even conjure in our minds. And so we need to be very careful in exposing these things, that we do so in such a way that we do it in a veiled fashion, if you will. For a long time, the scriptures speak of euphemisms. The idea is that a word or a phrase that is said to cover up something that is more abrupt, something that is spoken of that can be covered or veiled in a little bit. And so that's the way it is that we are to speak of these things, because they are so horrible. You know, the darkness that is dark is very dark. And so in exposing it with the light, we need to be careful. Verse 13, but all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. The idea, I think, behind this is that it is light that makes everything visible. And so it is. We can use night vision goggles to see in the night, but it's still not nearly as clear as in the day. The Bible uses the expression referring to poor eyesight as our eyes growing dim. And as the older I get, the more I realize the reality of this, that our eyes are growing dim. In fact, I've got a pair of reading glasses now that I carry around with me. They're red, so I don't usually take them out because, you know, red glasses on me just, you know, don't cut it. But I actually put a little pair of rubber plastic and tied it around there so that I could hang it around my neck. So that, you know, if I'm outside working or something, I actually started it when I went fishing one day and I realized I couldn't see the hook hole that I was trying to put the string or the fishing line through. You know, I couldn't bait my hook because I couldn't set the hook up. And so I said, I need to bring some glasses with me, but I didn't want to bring like good glasses. So I put those red pair in my fishing box and took them. And that way, if they fell off in the water or whatever, they can still float because they got the rubber thing on them. And so, my eyes are growing dim. That's just a way life is, that they grow dim. And it is the light that is no longer able to be received properly that is preventing me from being able to see correctly. Because whatever light is exposed, that's what makes it visible. And so we are to expose the darkness, call sin what it is, and steer people away from the danger of it. Now, to illustrate this, I want to use a story that has circulated around the internet very frequently as a real story. I looked it up. It's not. It's fake. Okay. In fact, it's almost a joke. But you might have seen it coming across Facebook or, you know, online or something like that as a real story, but it's not. But it does make the point that I'm trying to make, and so I'm going to use it as an illustration. And supposedly it is a correspondence between the Canadians and the Americans off the coast of Newfoundland. An American naval vessel sees a light at 12 o'clock dead ahead, and the commander of the ship announces over the radio, "Please divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision." To which the Canadians respond on their airways, "Recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision." The Americans then get on the line and say, "This is the captain of the U.S. Navy ship. I say again, divert your course." The Canadians come on and say, "No, I say again, you divert your course." Americans get on the line and say, "This is the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln, the second largest ship in the United States Atlantic Fleet. We are accompanied by 3 destroyers, 3 cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north. That's 15 degrees north, or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship." To which the Canadians respond, "This is a lighthouse, your call." Now, why do I say that? Because very often the light is designed to divert danger. It's to expose the darkness. It is to expose what is dangerous there, and yet some people refuse to pay attention to the light. This is in fact what the scriptures say. Jesus came as the light, but they loved darkness more than the light. And so the darkness did not comprehend it. So it's often very hard for us to proclaim the light because people do not like the light. They love the darkness. John chapter 3 verse 19 says, "And this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light lest his deeds should be exposed." Why is there so much backlash when preachers and Christians in the media or even in the public spheres say something that is sin as sin? Why is there so much backlash? Because the world loves darkness, walks in darkness. They don't like the sin being exposed. Nevertheless, we are to expose the darkness. Recently, on the news, my wife has been keeping me abreast of it. I don't typically follow the news too much. It's too depressing most of the time. But my wife usually keeps me abreast of what's going on in the news. And I don't know if you have heard, but Planned Parenthood was exposed this week. And that's a good thing. But if you're not familiar with the story, Planned Parenthood was caught trying to sell human baby parts to those who had, were catching them in the act. And that's an exposing of darkness, is it not? And that's the kind of thing that needs to happen more and more, is darkness exposed. Now, I guarantee there's going to be a fight. This will not go down easy, and it'll try to be swept under the rug. And why? Because the people who walk in darkness love the darkness and don't want to be exposed to the light. There are so many issues on the public level that need to be exposed. So many ways they are, and yet there is so much more that needs to be done. And this is not only at the public level and the national level, but it's local level and personal level, individual level, in the community level. And be assured that if your light is exposing the darkness, there will be a fight. Ephesians 6, we're not getting there today, but we will here shortly, tells us how we are to prepare for that fight and what we are to equip ourselves with. I want to close with verse 14. Verse 14 says, "Therefore, he says, awake you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light." It's difficult to determine the origins of this. This is not actually a quote from the Old Testament, although there is similarities to Isaiah chapter 60, verse 1. Paul is perhaps using this as a paraphrase. Maybe this was a New Testament hymn or the people of the New Testament had developed this into a hymn of some kind. We're not sure exactly where this quote comes from, but it does seem to be an offering of an invitation to those who walk in darkness, an offering of invitation to those who are living in darkness without the light. John Calvin says it this way: "Let us therefore endeavor as far as lies in our power to rouse the sleeping and dead, that we may bring them to the light of Christ." I like the way the commentator Barnes in his notes says, "The man that is sleeping on the verge of a dangerous precipice, we would approach and say, 'Awake, you who are in danger.' The child that is sleeping quietly in its bed while the flames are bursting into the room, we would rouse and say, 'Awake, you who perish.' Why not use the same language to the sinner slumbering on the verge of ruin in a deep sleep while the flames of wrath are kindled around him? We have no difficulty in calling on sleepers elsewhere to awake when in danger. How can we have any difficulty when speaking to sinners?" And so, my friends, let us call to those who are sleeping in darkness: "Awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light."
We struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your legacy?